Gutelei. Shema Divakti Vinamta Shamiti Namane. Namaste Sushwadi Devi. Kuru Vanita Chana Nivasa Sundarati Skatita. Kiri Raj Kovalan Ki Jai. Tumilandasya, Kena Dina Shalakaya, Taksi Samilatan, Dena Tasmai, Sri Ravenama, Sri Chaitanya Manavistam, Stapitam, Dena Bhutale, Sam, Pakadamayam, Yadati, Sapanandika. Manchi Kapachubis, Chakipas, and the Vavis, Apatitanam, Bapanego, Vashmavinama. Remember something from yesterday's class. Always a problem, huh? Any other things you remember?
His introduction. If he's pushed the button on the impersonalists.
Yes. What do you mean he pushed the button on the impersonalists?
Chris lost the understanding that God is impersonal.
Well, speaking about the personality that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. What was the example that he gave? It was an example that I gave, and Prabhupada gave a different one. What was the one that he gave? Yeah, that was one. He who knows does not speak. But are we water pots? It may be good for water pots, but are we water pots? What other example did he give? An anti-impersonalist example. I'll give you a hint.
When you go in an airplane up above the clouds,
yes,
you see the sun clearly.
Yes. Yes. And what was that example showing?
Behind the, all the energy is personality of God is. You have to get.
That the clouds never affect the sun, although it may affect the little ants-like persons below the clouds. The little fellows on the ground get affected by the clouds, but the sun is never affected by the clouds. So the jivas become affected by Maya, but it is not possible for Krishna to become affected by Maya. So when Krishna comes to this world, he remains forever unaffected. So after finishing Prabhupada's introduction, and perhaps the first thing that Prabhupada did was define what is Chaitanya Charitamrita, what does it mean? The activities of the living force or the living entity within the realm of eternity. Because this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to give us. He wants to give us our actual activities in the realm of eternity, the activities of the soul in the realm of eternity, because now we are caught with the activities of the soul, the eternal soul, entrapped and identifying with temporary, ephemeral matter, always changing matter. And because we have that identification due to the influence of the cloud of Maya, therefore we undergo so many transformations continuously, and ultimately when the body dies, we suffer like anything due to that identification. Just like when the man in the car gets hit, his car gets hit, he feels pain, even though he may not be physically injured. Just his car getting hit, he feels pain, he feels angry, he jumps out of the car, "You hit me!" But actually, there was no hitting of him at all. It was all hitting of the external shell around him, the car. So because of her identification with matter, both on the gross physical level and the subtle mental level, so many miseries come to us. We're longing for so many pleasures, but we end up with so many miseries due to this identification, because Maya is so bewildering. Maya means suffering for the living entity. But due to Maya, Maya illusorily tricks the living entity into thinking, "I'm going to find happiness." But he only ends up with the sandy taste, eating ashes continuously. So Mahaprabhu is coming to teach us, Krishna himself is coming to teach us the activities of a living entity in eternity. So these first 14 verses, we're up to the point where we're going to hear what Prabhupada says in these introductory classes, talking to very, very, very young beginning devotees in 1967. The most anyone had been chanting was perhaps 1 year. Most have been chanting much less. And this is how, and Prabhupada is going to explain the most esoteric of subject matters, the descent of Mahaprabhu and his great gift. So let's listen. So we'll start by where Prabhupada is speaking about the first verse. So what is that first verse? Who remembers? Obeisances to whom? Spiritual masters, devotees, incarnations, what's the difference between expansion, which means expansions, and the Supreme Lord himself, and his energy, yes, the Shakti, the energy. So this is the Panchatattva plus one. And what's the second verse? And they have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gaudadesh to dispel the ignorance of Kali Yuga out of their mercy. The third verse?
Yes.
He was seen as the impersonalist by the Jnanis, and what is the function of the localized Paramatma or the Super Soul? Okay, he's within every living entity's heart and provides life to the super soul, to the living entity. Consciousness, really. But also, the point I'm looking for is that he supports the actual material universe, too. So he has a function in relationship to the conscious living entities. So Vasya Chaham, Ride Sanavisto, he's in everyone's heart. But also, he is the maintainer of the Mama Angso Teja Sambhava. As the Super Soul, he maintains the existence of the material creation. He's in every atom, between every atom. So that's the third verse. And then the fourth, fifth, and sixth also deal with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The fourth is Kuruneyavachunokalo. samapayitam unnatav indirarasam sabhakti syam. So this, and he's, may he always illuminate this Mahaprabhu, his blessing, giving benedictions. The same Mahaprabhu was realized different ways by the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. That same absolute truth, may he illuminate your heart as he comes as the Kali Yuga avatar to bestow what has not been ever given before, not been given in a long time. This very intimate devotional service to he himself. So may that Mahaprabhu be always situated. Sada Vidya Kandare. Be always spurat or manifest within the core of your heart. Sachinandara. Then in the fifth verse, he's going to explain more details about the conjugal love that he's going to give. Radha Krishna Panayava Krita Ladini Shakti Asmad Ekatmana Api Bhuvi Pura. So that now they appear in one form. So they're separated eternally and they come together as Mahaprabhu and all the loving affairs, Ladini, Shakti, Asna, they're all transcendental. So he's going to give something transcendental having to do with the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. But don't mistake them for the loving affairs between the males and females of this world. So even though our realization of that may be very, very shallow. We may not be actually realized on that, but yet we should understand, no, this is completely different. We may not know what it is in the positive, but the vyatirek explanation, the definition by negation, it is not of this world. It is something completely different. So that is what he's going to give. And then in so he is Krishna coming in the mood of Srimati Radharani. He's manifested himself as Radharani. Radha Bhava, in the mood of Radharani Dyuti, with the effulgence of Radharani Suvalitam, like gold, Nomi, Krishna Srupam. Krishna has accepted this form of Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And then in the sixth verse, the final verse about Mahaprabhu is why his internal reasons to come, that unata ujara rasam, he's giving that through the Sankirtan movement, as will be explained. And the internal reason for him to come is that he has three things that he wants to find out about that he cannot understand from his own position of Krishna. So he has to adopt the Radha Bhava Dhuti, the mood and Kanti, the complexion of Srimati Radharani. He has to adopt the mood of Radharani to understand these things. And those three things are?
The
Mahima. It's easier almost to do it from the Sanskrit first, isn't it? The Mahima. That's the glorious pranaya, the pranaya, the love. Shri radhaya pranaya mahima kridviso vinayaiva svadyo yena bhutam madhurima, the sweetness of her love, the glories of her love. Sokim chasyam anubhavata kidrisam vettilovat tad bhavadya samajani satchigorba sindau Harindu. And the third is how she manifests the qualities in him. She pulls out of him, out of Krishna, who is unlimited. He's like Krishna is an unlimited emporium? is an unlimited emporium of qualities. And, but certain of those qualities are pulled out of him by Srimati Radharani only. So he wants to understand the nature of her love that can do this. So this actually also expresses something of the heart of Krishna and why bhakti yoga is the process, because to go to Goloka Vrindavan, because it evokes the compassion of Krishna, that quality from the emporium of Krishna's heart. It is extracted and pulled out by the love of the devotee, just like a father cannot tolerate seeing his beloved son suffer, who loves him so dearly. If he has something to do about it, how can he tolerate that? Or mother, how can they tolerate their children crying out to them for help when that father and mother actually has the capacity to help? So because of the crying out of the devotee from the emporium, I never quite thought of Krishna's heart like an emporium. I usually thought of some a shop in Hong Kong. When I think of emporium. There's something called a sympathetic vibration. You know what a sympathetic vibration is? You know what a sympathetic vibration is. Just like if I hit a particular note on with my voice or with a tuning fork or one instrument, a string instrument, if your stringed instrument is over there, that note will vibrate. Mm. So because of the loving vibrations of the devotees, what to speak of Srimati Radharani, Krishna's heart vibrates. So that metaphor will be used. So anyway, those are the six verses. That the first of the six verses. Then the five on whom? On who? Nityananda Prabhu. And then how many more on Advaita Prabhu? Two on Advaita. And on Nityananda Prabhu's verses, the first one gives all the, sums up what the next four are about. About the, that he is the source of the Sankarshan in the spiritual world, and the Karna Daksha Vishnu, Gaba Daksha Vishnu, and Kira Daksha Vishnu, which also includes Seshanaga. So those are the five verses about Nityananda, then two about Advaita Charja, and then one about the Panchatattva. So those are the 14 verses that make up the introduction. So now we'll hear what Prabhupada says about the first verse. First verse is obeisances to the six aspects of Mahaprabhu. In the beginning, and remember also in Prabhupada's introduction, one thing that just by looking over here that struck me, in relationship to Krishna being like the sun and not coming down below the clouds, similarly for devotees, even they, due to their contact with Krishna and using everything in Krishna's service, being actually a devotee, having no self-interest, just using everything in Krishna's service, they, even when within the material world, remain always in relationship with Krishna, and therefore they remain not in the material world, in fact, even when seemingly in the material world. Okay, so here's what Prabhupada says about the first verse. In the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami writes, I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual masters. That's the first verse. He uses the plural here to indicate the disciplic succession. He offers obeisances not to his spiritual master alone, but to the whole parampara, the chain of disciplic succession beginning with Lord Krishna himself. Thus the author addresses the guru in the plural to show the highest respect for all his predecessor spiritual masters. So a spiritual master is representing the line that is his duty. Purely representing the line, what Prabhupada called the transparent via media. So respect to is given to all the spiritual masters by Kaviraj Goswami by addressing his spiritual master or spiritual master in the plural. And ultimately, there is one spiritual master. The original spiritual master is Krishna. He is the source. So after offering obeisances to the disciplic succession, the author pays obeisances to all other devotees. Why would he pay obeisances to all other devotees? Bhante's laughing because it's such a silly question. But it's a hard one to answer, though. Okay, yeah, good answer.
Could he see himself as lower than the moon, which is why I say,
yeah, because devotees are means devoted to Krishna. This is the natural position of the soul. Jivera Srupoi, Krishna Nitya Sarupa. The identity of the soul is in relationship to Krishna, and to think of anyone as separate from Krishna is inaccurate. Even to the extent of knowing that the person is an eternal soul, unless one also adds part and parcel of Krishna or Krishna's servant, it is an incomplete understanding of who they are. Just like a new trend and it comes from the place where so many wonderful trends begin. When people introduce themselves, how do they, even fairly formally, they introduce themselves just by their first name?
Hi, I'm Mike.
Huh?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Mike.
Or whatever, yeah. Whatever your first name is. They don't, but that's, that, I'm sure that would appall someone like Saranagati Mataji. Because when you introduce yourself, you introduce, not you're saying not only your first name, but your surname, which means your family name, which introduces you in relationship to your family. So so you're not just an individual floating in your own individuality in this world, but no, you have a relationship to family, and that there's so many implications to that in a cultured place. Is that therefore, if you know me, you can trust me because here's my family's name and address, and I don't want to give my family a bad name. In Oriental cultures, this is, and in any old culture, you don't want to give the family a bad name by doing anything inappropriate. The whole family is embarrassed. So here I am. Here's my first name and my family name. So similarly, so the point being that if you give just as giving your first name doesn't really tell who you are, because you have a relationship with a family. No one just pops out into existence, you know, either in a test tube or, you know, just people just coming on people trees or springing just into the out of the air or something, like spontaneously popping out of
downloaded,
you know, and yeah, a website.
They use pronouns, father's name, give their own name.
Yeah,
son of so and so.
Yes, even in India, they ask you when you And Israel, even when you fill out your entry into the country, they ask you your father's name. In India, they used to do that too, maybe.
They used to announce when they go somewhere in the king's say darbar.
Yes.
Then everyone introduces, and they introduce themselves as son of so and so.
Yes. And Krishna is called Nandanandana also.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But these old-fashioned things, they have actually deep significance, and everyone nowadays feels disconnected. This is why no one feels they have much of a relationship. Not no one, but less and less the tendency to have much of a relationship with the family. We're just sort of abstract entities, and everyone feels so lonely and disconnected because of this. So the point being that any definition of who we are that's not in relationship to Krishna is incomplete at best, or it's wrong. Because Jivera, Sarupa, his own Rupa, his own form, Krishna, Nityadas, eternally Krishna's servant. So the devotees acknowledge that, and they're living in relationship to Krishna. And therefore, or even if they're trying to live on that platform, therefore they are worthy of respect and obeisances. Just by someone making that attempt. It's so rare in this world. It's so rare because the world is built to facilitate. The material world is organized to facilitate our turning our back on Krishna. So it's so rare that someone will say, what are they saying? Say no to material existence. You have a right, it's your right to say no to material existence. So everyone can do that, but it's so rare that someone is seriously attempting to say no to material existence. Extremely rare, making the attempt to turn towards Krishna. So such a person is worthy of respect and obeisances. That's why. And as was also said, to maybe they'll be kind to us and make us serious too. But instead, what's the tendency? Instead of respecting the devotees, what do we do? We tend to do.
He's like this.
Very deep tendency, very very much a problem in spiritual life. So obeisances to all other devotees. After offering obeisances to the disciplic succession, the author pays obeisances to all other devotees, and then to the Lord himself, to his incarnations, to the expansions of Godhead. So there's a difference between an incarnation and expansion. Balaram and Nityananda expansions. Incarnation is Advaita Charja, and so many different incarnations who come to the material world, and to the manifestation of Krishna's internal energy, so that in the Panchatattva, that's Gadadhar. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes called Krishna Chaitanya. So when did he get the name Krishna Chaitanya? Everyone knows that. When he took sannyas, this is the name that appeared in Keshava Bharti Maharaj's heart. Because you give chetana, or consciousness, to the living entities of Krishna, you are called Krishna Chaitanya. So touching, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes called Krishna Chaitanya, is the embodiment of all of these. He is God, Guru, Devotee, Incarnation, Internal Energy, and Expansion of God. Because, so they are not different from Krishna. That's we could say that's the reason why we offer obeisances to the devotees, is because they are connected with Krishna. And to disrespect the devotees, or any living entity, in fact, is one of the aparads, offenses that Bhaktivinoda Thakur names in Bhajan Rahasya, is jana aparad. That's the offenses to any living entity, any person. Because everyone ultimately is connected with Krishna. And to see anything, everything is ultimately connected with Krishna. So therefore, nothing really should be disrespected. Everything and everyone should be given some honor for that reason. That actually is culture. So here, the point being that He is God, Guru, Devotee, Incarnation, Internal Energy, Expansion of God. As His associate Nityananda, He is the first expansion of God. As Advaita, He is an incarnation. As Gadadhar, He is the internal potency. And as Srivas, He is the marginal living entity in the role of a devotee. So that brings it to the point of the Panchatattva. Thus, Krishna should not be thought of as being alone, but should be considered as eternally existing with all His manifestations, as described by Ramanujacharya. In the Vishishta Dvaita philosophy, God's energies, expansions, and incarnations are considered to be oneness in diversity. So Krishna is the meaning of the Absolute Truth, that nothing is separate from Him. But that doesn't mean oneness and diversity. That's Ramanujacharya's Vishishta Advaita philosophy. It doesn't mean that everything is equal to the Supreme. So Mahaprabhu brings that to the perfection, the philosophy, by clearly explaining the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. That everything is simultaneously the same and yet simultaneously different from the Supreme, like the living entities, each and every one of us, were individual souls entrapped in particular bodies at this particular moment. But we have our relationship with Krishna. We have turned our back on it. We've forgotten it. But we have our relationship with Krishna. This is the meaning of the Absolute Truth, that everything should be seen in relationship with Krishna. And if one sees like that, if a living entity, a jiva, sees like that, as Prabhupada explained previously, then he can be he's not touched by Maya, even though he appears to be in the material world. Seeing everything in relationship with Krishna as Krishna's, not meant for our exploitation, for our pleasure, but rather meant for Krishna's pleasure. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchate. So in other words, Prabhupada explains, God is not separate from all of these. Everything together is God. So that is the Absolute Truth, the Lord and His energies. Actually, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is next paragraph, is not intended for the novice, for it is the postgraduate study of spiritual knowledge. Ideally, one begins with the Bhagavad Gita and advances through Srimad Bhagavatam to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Although all these great scriptures are on the same absolute level, for the sake of comparative study, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered to be on the highest platform. Every verse in it is perfectly composed. So what is, remember, Prabhupada is speaking this to a bunch of what? Hopefully accepting. But he's sitting there at 22nd Avenue, actually, you're not meant to hear this. That's what he's saying, basically. This is very advanced. The Bhagavad Gita hasn't been published yet, even. Prabhupada's edition hasn't been published. He's been lecturing on that in the evenings. And the first three volumes of the was comprised of the Bhagavatam, which comprised the first canto, some of them have read. And he's saying, first, really, to understand Chaitanya Charitamrita, one should first have studied the Bhagavad Gita and reached the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, which is surrender unto Krishna. That we're souls, and we're eternal souls. We have a relationship with Krishna. The relationship is of service, and we're actually meant to surrender to him. In loving service, surrender isn't the proper word. Sharanam has a sweeter meaning than surrender. Did you make that point?
Did I?
Do you? Sometimes? No. Someone?
I've heard it.
Yes. It means a return. Sharanagati means to a return to our loving relationship to Krishna. In the beginning, surrender means what? Do as you're told. Just to establish, because we don't know how to return to our loving relationship with Krishna, to place Krishna in the center. That's what surrender means, in this sense of Sharanagati or Sharanambraja. It means to a return to placing Krishna in the center of our existence. Very difficult for a conditioned soul. So in the beginning, to place Krishna in the center, to do what is pleasing to Krishna, one has to learn. One has to neglect what one is thinking, and to some degree do what one is told, until one learns what is pleasing to Krishna. Because prior to that, until one learns in the proper way, one can only make his judgments and discrimination from the realm of his experience, which is basically his mind, his or her mind. So Prabhupada is saying that all these scriptures are true, absolutely true, but yet one is, the Chaitanya Charitamrita of these three scriptures is the highest. Because, and what does highest mean? It deals most intimately with our relationship with the Absolute Truth. And Prabhupada will explain that fairly soon. So now he's going to move to the second verse. First verse was obeisances to these different aspects of the one Absolute Truth. And these aspects are aspects of everything is an aspect of the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth means all-inclusive, nothing is separate. There is no devil who has somehow escaped the control of the Lord, and he set up a rebellious renegade province somewhere. It's not like that. In the second verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the author offers his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. He compares them to the sun and the moon because they dissipate the darkness of the material world. In this instance, the sun and the moon have risen together. So these first two verses, which Prabhupada has spoken of, will be explained in some a little more detail in towards the end of the first chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then the second chapter will begin with the third verse. Now, the next we'll hear about first three and then four. So three is about that which is known as Brahman, Paramatma. This is all Bhagavan, this is all Mahaprabhu, the Absolute Truth. In the Western world, where the glories of Lord Chaitanya are relatively unknown, one may inquire, who is Krishna Chaitanya? The author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj answers that question in the third verse of this book. Generally, in the Upanishads, the Supreme Absolute Truth is described in an impersonal way. But the personal aspect of the Absolute Truth is mentioned in the Ishopanishad, where we find the following verse. Haranyamayena patrena satyasya pehitam mukam tattvam pushanapavrinu satyadamayadristaye. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. And interestingly, this is from Ishopanishad. And you were in Los Angeles when Prabhupada spoke on Ishopanishad. It was one of the first books that he translated, and now it's a forgotten book. But it was one of the first books that Prabhupada translated. Why? An Upanishad. Yeah, which was everyone, because no one really had much of a personal conception, or especially a in detail conception of. A little famous. Yeah. It's quite famous. I think it also comes. It also comes in other Upanishads too, not only there, but. Om Purnam Madah Purnam Idam. I think so. There's one Upanishad, it's called the Keno Upanishad.
Why?
Yeah, why? The why? Why? So many different Upanishads.
Keno is an Upanishad.
Huh?
Keno Upanishad.
Yes. But that's the name of it, an interesting name, just why. So that will answer the question, why? Why? This book. So Prabhupada specifically, it's my thought, he never said exactly why he translated it first to my knowledge or so early, but it was because there were so many impersonalists, those who were interested in Krishna consciousness had an impersonal conception. So this particular Isha Upanishad about the control of the Supreme Lord describes this specific verse is a very personalistic verse, that although the effulgence or the personal aspect of the Lord is there, the devotee is not interested in that. Please remove that so I can see your form of bliss. Oh my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. The impersonalists do not have the power to go beyond the effulgence of God and arrive at the personality of Godhead from whom this effulgence is emanating. The Ishopanishad is a hymn to that personality of Godhead. It is not that the impersonal Brahman is denied. It is also described, but that Brahman is revealed to be the glaring effulgence of the body of Lord Krishna. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we learn that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. In other words, Sri Krishna Chaitanya is the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. The impersonal Brahman, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, is resting upon me. I am the basis of it. Just like the sun rays are there, but they rest or depend on, they are relative to the sun planet, or as we say, the sun globe. So similarly, the impersonal Brahman rests upon the form of the Lord, and it is his effulgence. So, and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we learn that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. In other words, Sri Krishna Chaitanya is the basis of impersonal Brahman. The Paramatma or Supersoul, who is present within the heart of every living entity and within every atom of the universe, is but the partial representation of Lord Chaitanya. So what verse in the Bhagavad Gita have I been quoting on this in relationship? There's two verses, or not two really, but that he's in everyone's heart, Savasya Cham Riddhesanavisto, and Ishvara Sava Bhutanam Riddhese Arjuna Tishtati, and Yantra Riddhani Maya, and Mama Angsa Tejo Sambhava, that by the Super Soul is his Angsa, his part, and by that part, that portion, even though it's a plenary or complete portion, he's Krishna sustains and supports the universe. So so that is also a part of Mahaprabhu, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a partial representation of Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, being the basis of both Brahman and the all-pervading Paramatma as well, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As such, he is full in six opulences: wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. In short, we should know that he is Krishna, God, and that nothing is equal to or greater than him. There is nothing superior to be conceived. He is the Supreme Person. So what, in one sentence, is Prabhupada saying there? And who is the him he's talking about here? Yeah, and he said, and none different. We should know that he is Krishna, God, and nothing is equal or greater than him. There is nothing superior to be conceived. He is the Supreme Person, speaking about Mahaprabhu. So this is interesting, to say the least. When hearing later, starting in, I believe in chapter 13, we start hearing Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses all strength, all wealth, all opulences, all knowledge, renunciation, beauty, and the other one. The one that is fame. Yes, thank you. Yes. He is the Supreme Person. Srila Rupa Goswami, a confidential devotee, taught for more than 10 days continually by Lord Chaitanya, wrote, Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gora Tushe Nama. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more magnanimous than any other avatar, even Krishna himself, because he is bestowing freely what no one else has ever given, pure love of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya's teachings begin from the point of surrender to Krishna. He does not pursue the path of karma or jnana yoga or hatha yoga, but begins at the end of material existence, at the point where one gives up all material attachment. That's surrender. So that really reveals why it's so hard to surrender, because surrender means giving up all material attachment on the gross or subtle platform and being only attached to pleasing Krishna, placing Krishna in the center. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna begins his teachings by distinguishing the soul from matter. And in the 18th chapter, he concludes at the point where the soul surrenders to him in devotion. The Mayavadis would have all talk cease there, but at that point, the real discussion only begins. And the Vedanta, as the Vedanta Sutra says at the very beginning, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now let us begin to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Rupa Goswami thus praises Lord Chaitanya as the most munificent. What does munificent mean? Generous. Another word for it too? Magnanimous, generous. beneficent, could we say also? He's, as he praises him, Rupa Goswami praises him as the most munificent incarnation of all, for he gives the greatest gift by teaching the highest form of devotional service. In other words, he answers the most important inquiries that anyone can make. So the next four or five paragraphs are very, very important, so I don't want to rush them. So they're really an expansion, continuing expansion of this point. Mahaprabhu gives the highest form of devotional service. What is the highest form of devotional service? In other words, he answers the most important inquiries that anyone can make, which is, what is the highest form of devotional service and how to attain that highest form? So, really, now he's going to begin to speak Prabhupada, and also the next verse is also, what is the highest form? Because he's already explained that the highest form of realization is not... It's not impersonal, it's not the partial understanding, but it's Bhagavan, and we're meant to surrender to him in devotion. Devotion means love, so that means devotional service. So what is the highest form of that devotion? Don't tell everything in advance.
But you asked
me
a question.
What could she do? And of all the gopis, but that position's already taken. So what's no? Don't answer the question now. Okay. So the question that you want to ask, and that Prabhupada's going to answer in the next paragraph, or begin answering in the next paragraph, is he's given the highest form of devotional service, the most intimate, detailed knowledge of devotional service, and he answers the most important inquiries that anyone can make, because the Atato Brahmagigyasa, he's spoken about that. Now is the time. Human life is the time to inquire about the Absolute Truth. So what is the most important inquiry? Is how what is the highest perfection of consciousness, and how to attain it, and as we spoke of, that's what Tapan Misra specifically asked Mahaprabhu when he journeyed to East Bengal. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Oh, I closed the book.
Yeah.
What to do? Maybe you can read it for me.
Well, my books in quite a few places sometimes quite significantly. What I think is quite significantly different.
Okay, yours is an old. This is edited. They'll be in the book itself. This has been edited to make it more accurate.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay. So what is the significant?
Well, it's the first manifestation of energy, and yours said something about incarnation, and that's something which I probably don't need to worry about at all. So that one last point does it say, talking about manifestation and incarnation, mine head says manifestation versus incarnation.
And for expansion, it said expansion, I think. Nityananda was an expansion, I think.
And here's the first manifestation of energy.
Not energy, yeah. Anyway, this is, you know, there's often a controversies within ISKCON. Should you leave Prabhupada's words the way they are exactly, or you should edit them to make them clearer? And because, anyway, I personally, clearly in my mind, you should make it clear. The editors who are trusted, who know everything, they should make it clear. Otherwise, no one has, you know, the Prabhupada's words, perhaps, but then may not even Prabhupada's words. There may be something got mixed up in the transcriptions or this or that. So the I vote for making editing for clarity.
Who is that?
Dravida Prabhu.
Only him.
Yes, only him.
And everyone agrees with that.
Who? What in the world will everyone agree on? No, it's always some people will say we shouldn't.
It's very trusted.
Who also happen to trust you on that side of the trusting people.
I have heard people saying that Bhagavad Gita editing by Jayadvaita
Maharaj.
We should not have done it like that.
I know, that's the people on the other side, but those people.
So you go the planet of the trees.
Yeah, there we go. Let's not get into this one exactly, but it's so much clearer. And he did it so carefully. He went to the original transcripts. And he went to, for the Bhagavad Gita, they had Prabhupada's original dictations. And they referred to the commentaries Prabhupada were using. So it was so clear that he made it more accurate. But people have attachment, because, you know, when you learn something, you know, you learn something in the beginning, that's your first taste. So they like that taste. But it's, if you want to actually understand the Bhagavad Gita, it's much easier and clearer from the edited version. So there was one fellow in 1966, perhaps. He was going to the university and he was getting. It was the 60s in the United States, so you got for experience you could get university credits. So part of his name was Neil. And he part of his university experience credits, he went to see the Swami and study under the Swami for a semester, and he would get university credits for that. So he knew how to type. So, but he didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. He didn't know anything about Sanskrit. So he typed the transcriptions. He would listen to Prabhupada's voice, and he didn't, and he, from the tapes Prabhupada made, and he would type that, and based on that, the original Bhagavad Gita that they say don't change was made. And, you know, one, as Saranagati pointed out, there was one of them in the original Bhagavad Gita. It says that, you know, if you worship your ancestors, you go to the planet of the trees. With the trees, because for what it's there, what Prabhupada was saying, it was changed to Pitri Loka. The worshippers of the ancestors go to the Pitri Loka. So he heard the trees, the planet of the trees. So that was in the Bhagavad Gita, the first Bhagavad Gita that I read. Yes, why have to go to that planet by worshiping the ancestors? Trees everywhere. So for so many years, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, we would say you go to the planet. It wasn't what Prabhupada said, it was what Neil said, because he couldn't, Neil heard, you know, innocently. And there were so many things like that. And Jayadvaita Maharaj, he did it so carefully, and he gets so much people criticize him for it. And he sent around all the corrections first to like tens and 20 hundreds of devotees, asking what they thought about it and things. And he referred always to the original tapes or the original manuscripts, or when there was a real, wasn't really clear, he looked at the commentaries, because Prabhupada got it mostly from the commentary of Baladeva Vidyabhusan. So and then people give him so much trouble for it. And I think he does mind after a while. He does, you know, because he keeps, you know, after you get tired. It's been 20 years already, almost. So you get tired of fighting the same silly battle. In my opinion. He gets tired of it. And
you want to talk something, so they'll always pull out something or something.
But the reason is, you know, mostly the reason is that they read, this is the one that they read when they were early. You know, there have been different editions, and that's one of the reasons. And, you know, that's the one they have attachment to, that, you know, they think it's sweeter or something, the language that's used. Even in Hayagriva, when he did the first editing of it, instead of cow protection, when Krishna Garasi had cattle raising. That was the job of Vice, is cattle raising. Prabhupada didn't like that very much.
Modern concept.
But anyway, as you're pointing out, that the controversies must go on. This is the material world.
Is there something to talk about?
I noticed that an expert artist who paint portraits,
yes,
deliberately put something wrong in it because they know what's going to be criticized. So then they can change what was wrong in it.
When Lalita went to Sacred Heart Convent School in Mathura, the head nun told her, "Only God gets 100%. Everyone else gets less."
That's right.
The test. Lalita didn't like that very much.
Sorbonne was complaining about the mark, and the professor said, "What do you expect? 100 is for God, 90% is for such and such, and if you're just a student, you only get out of the 80s, you really
die." I get more than 78%.
78%,
right? Yes. 50 is for the organism. 54 is for God.
86 for Lord Shiva. 96 for Lord Narayan.
Who are you again?
It's funny how in India, in the United States, they have the grading system is that you can get 100, and, you know, 90 is excellent. But in India, you can't get more than first in class will get like a 50 or something, 40%, 50. 52 or something, the top one in the class. So you start from a lower position, you know, less of a false ego, but Americans couldn't handle that. Yeah.
Eventually, we
only get 100. Well, I even have more than 100 sometimes.
Consent too. Yes. You have not yet been to the United States. Should go. Bucky to have his mind blown every now and then too. Where the pieces would land. If anyone liked the big day out, they'd love it.
America will be like,
it's the land of